good evening, or good morning, or good afternoon. Welcome to the next edition of the Bring on the Cats podcast. Tonight, as you heard on the introduction, Salute Me, Fabulous, featuring Lil Wayne. Only appropriate given what happened last week in New York City. Tonight, this is TB on the podcast. I've got Panjandrum and Bracket Cat with me tonight. So say hello, gentlemen, or whatever you want to say.
I salute you both.
That'll be 30 yards for two salutes. Well, ladies and gentlemen, if you clicked on this podcast hoping to hear a long wrap-up of the ever-so-exciting Pinstripe Bowl from last week, you're going to be sorely disappointed because we don't feel like talking about it tonight. I wrote about it last week. We're all thoroughly pissed off at the ref for being a complete douchebag. And we do not in any way blame Adrian Hilburn for what happened. In fact, congrats, Adrian. You are now a much bigger star than you ever would have been. I'm sorry that it had to happen that way, but I guess you just take what life gives you and make do with it. So we will not be talking about the Pinstripe Bowl or football, although I will advise you, no matter how long this runs, to stay tuned to the very end when we will have what I believe will probably be an epic rant by Panjandrum about the potential promotion of Sean Snyder to tight ends coach, which will undoubtedly be the most excited, I shouldn't say excited, the most worked up that anybody has ever been over his alma mater's promotion of anyone to the position of tight ends coach.
Well, yeah, I'm pissed. Who isn't pissed? Anyway, we'll
save that. Just go ahead and save that. We're going to start talking a little bit of Big 12 basketball, K-State basketball. We've just come out. The Cats have just finished non-conference play with a win over, who was the last opponent? I got lost for a minute there. One of you guys saved me. Who did we just beat this week?
Savannah State,
thank you. Cats finished non-conference play and began Big 12 play on the road this weekend on Saturday in Stillwater against Oklahoma State. Probably, other than Allen Fieldhouse, probably the biggest house, well, maybe Mizzou Arena, but probably the biggest house of horrors in the Big 12 for K-State. Okie State looks pretty solid this year, so it's going to be a tough test going in there, but we're going to look back before we look forward and look a little bit at the three-game stretch where Jake Poland was suspended, and talk a little bit about his first game back. So I'll turn the floor over to you guys to sort of give your thoughts on what we saw during Jake's three-game suspension, what we expect with him back, and if you really feel like making this a two-hour podcast, you can talk about what will happen when Curtis Kelly comes back on January 15th. So go ahead, one of you.
Go ahead and start bracket.
All right. Flashing back to the night this all started, when I was stuck in a city hall meeting for 2 hours and getting text messages about, why aren't Jake and Curtis on the floor? Not in the most optimal position to figure it out, but obviously we all know kind of how that went down, and there was like the immediate five stages of grief, I think. We all went really quick through disbelief and right on to rationalization, because I remember that very night people saying, oh, this could be a good thing for the team. I mean, we've all been hacked off about the way the team has been playing and the Florida game that no one was over yet 48 hours previous, and I think it all just sort of bottled up into, righteous anger. Good week there. People were pretty much tarring and feathering Poland and Kelly. Well, you know, I mean, I think our initial reactions were right. I think it did help the team. I mean, you've seen a lot of people step up the last 2.5 weeks that weren't stepping up beforehand. You've seen some really fantastic plays from guys who hadn't even been on the court that much. We've had, our three-game most productive offensive streak of the season, if not the entire Frank Martin career. Player like Wally Judge emerging like he has, so it's kind of hard to argue that that adversity and that forcing people to fill new roles didn't have a positive effect. Go, Panda.
No, I agree.
No, I mean, I was with TB when this all went down, and we were in the Power and Light getting ready to go into the game. I was probably a little buzzed at the time, so my reaction was probably a little more animated than it would have been had I not been on the sauce, but...
I think it was something along the lines of, oh, what the fuck?
That was pretty much it. I think our initial thought was, oh my god, it was Dillard's.
We can't even cheat right.
I mean, I just, that was the first thought. And I mean, I guess it was never confirmed, so no one from Dillard's, please call us. But you guys said no comment, so whatever. It's not really that. I think Brackett's right. I think it did bring the team together. I think the team has looked a lot better. I think it gave... offensively, I think one of the roots of the problems has been the fact that Jake was trying to do everything. It seemed pretty clear that Jake was trying to handle too much of the load. Maybe it was because we were inexperienced. Maybe it was because Frank told him to do it. But without Jake and without Curtis, they were forced to figure it out themselves. And they did. It wasn't always pretty. The, you know, the UNLV game was just, it was hard to watch. UMKC game, even though they won by a decent margin, it was still pretty tough to watch. But, you know, after that happened, it looked better. They're hitting open shots. Will Spradling is kind of quietly on a shooting streak. He's kind of on a tear. Javal Miles kind of showed us that he actually does bring something to the table other than having a great accent. And, you know, Martavius is still just kind of being the all-around utility guy that we kind of need him to be. So there's kind of a nice point guard by committee going on. Jake coming back against Savannah kind of shows that maybe there's a fire relit in him. Maybe he has more faith in his teammates to kind of carry the load, so he feels like the game can come to him. At least that's kind of what I got from the Savannah. He didn't really seem to push much. He just kind of came. It just kind of came to him, and he scored 24 points and looked fantastic. So I think overall this will be a net positive. I don't want to sound like a silver lining pie in the sky guy, but it has given guys like Wally Judge a chance to have a couple of double-doubles. He looked fantastic on the boards against Savannah. Now, I know that won't necessarily translate against Marshall Moses down in Stillwater, but I think that maybe a light is kind of turning on and is flipping on for Wally, hence my I support Wally by drafting him stance. And we could see, at the very least, you know, what I'm hoping for is a 9-9, maybe a 10-8, you know, I'm not saying he's going to average a double-double, but I think the potential for 10 points a game and nearly 10 rebounds is there just due to athleticism if he can kind of continue to work and keep his head on straight. So I think, you know, with the suspensions, a 3-game stretch, I think we probably came out net gain.
Well, I'm going to go back to the night that the suspensions were announced when I was down at the Power and Light with Pan, among others. And I'm gonna sort of disagree with you a little bit, Bracket Cat. I don't believe that I ever went through the disbelief stage, because I think that if it would have just been Jake, that maybe I would have gone through the disbelief stage. But when I heard that Curtis Kelly was involved, I was immediately open to any possibility and any suggestion. I wouldn't have been surprised at really anything at that point. So when I heard that they had apparently been given a massive discount on clothes at Dillard's, that really was about the least of anything that would have surprised me. Yeah, well, whatever. Or whatever happened. I don't know that I really was that, you know, in that much disbelief over it just because Curtis was involved. But, you know, it was kind of one of those slap your forehead, like, what else can go wrong this season type of moments. And, Pan, I don't think that I'll call you a silver lining sunshine pumper or whatever you said for thinking that we came out of this with a net positive. I think I'll just go ahead and cut to the chase and call you a Nebraska fan. Sorry, low blow there. But no, I agree. I think that we probably did end up coming out ahead with these suspensions. I'll say that as far as the Jake suspension, I think we came out ahead with where we're going to end up. with Curtis Kelly, I'm going to reserve judgment until after Saturday is over, because if we lose at Oklahoma State, and I'm not going to say that we would win the game down there with Curtis Kelly, because we just suck ass in Stillwater, and I really don't, well, I know why, but it's a road game, and Stillwater is a tough place to play, but you know, if we lose that game, and it's a close, tight game, and we get eaten alive inside, I'm really going to have a hard time saying that we came out ahead on the Curtis Kelly thing, especially if he doesn't come back and play well. But I guess that's a topic for another day on the podcast. Pan and I talked a little bit a few weeks ago, and you know, before the suspension, I think it was maybe between the Florida game and the UNLV game. I'm not exactly sure what the timing was, but basically the thought was, this team needs to get in a fight. Like, there needs to be a team that, like, starts a brawl with them, or something needs to happen to give them a spark, because they just look dead on the court. There's no movement on offense. The, you know, the spark in the defense was gone. The rebounding was weak. They weren't playing Frank Martin basketball, basically. And we were thinking, you know, something's got to happen to snap them out of this. And, of course, our thought was, well, you know, get a team in here that'll piss them off, and, you know, somebody will take a swing or something, you know, as long as nothing too crazy happens, but something that'll get them to rally together and, you know, and come together and fight a little bit. Well, it didn't end up being a fight on the court or anything. It ended up being something off the court that, you know, it could have really had either effect. It could have brought the team together, or it could have really caused them to, you know, distrust each other and, you know, a lot of hard feelings. But it seems to me like they're playing well together right now. We'll hope that carries over to Saturday in Stillwater. And speaking, you know, now that we're talking a little bit about moving into conference play, every team, I believe, just about every team starts conference play except for KU, and I'm not sure, obviously somebody else can't start conference play if KU doesn't this weekend, but most teams will start conference play this weekend. Bracket Cat has done an excellent job on the site with the Know Thy Enemy posts, running down through each team in the league and their starters, their backups, how they've done so far, how he projects them to play in conference play. Best case scenario, worst case scenario, and ends up with a predicted order of finish. No matter how good any set of posts is, of course, there will always be something to nitpick. So, Pan, I'm going to turn it over to you. What did you see in Brackett's analysis that you're going to take issue with? Because it's really just no fun if we all sit here and just agree with each other. Pan, are you there?
Oh, sorry. I missed the question. I had to step away for just 1 second. I'm sorry. Repeat the question, please.
Okay, no problem. I understand you have a wife, a son, and a dog, so I can understand that there could be any of those three distractions at any point.
This place is a mausoleum after 8 p.m., so go ahead.
I was singing Brackett's praises for the Know Thy Enemy post, but then I was talking about how no matter – you know, how good the analysis is, there's always something that can be nitpicked or disagreed with. So I'm going to turn it over to you and let you state any disagreement that you have or criticism or anything that you want to say that is not great job, Brackett. Those were excellent, and I agree with every word you said.
I think we already kind of discussed this, you know, in the pre-show. But
we really should record the pre-show, too.
Yeah, pre-show is better than the show. I cannot get
probably.
Texas at number 5, and my argument was the very analytical because they're Texas argument. Just watching them, just seeing how soft Texas teams typically are, especially down the stretch later on in the season. I don't know how they end up finishing in the top half of the conference. Of course, you know, with the raging dumpster fire that is Oklahoma basketball, with how bad Texas Tech is, with how disappointing Baylor has been, you know, maybe they will sneak out enough wins to get to number 5. But I just don't see them as being that good. They've got some nice pieces. They've got talent. They're just Texas. you know, unless Kevin Durant or TJ Ford are there, they're just typically kind of meh. And if they end up being number five, I think that's an indictment of the quality of our conference. But that's just me, and maybe I'm just being too hard on them. I don't know. I did totally, you know, I think Texas A&M kind of snuck up on me too, thinking, oh, number four, A&M. But, you know, the stat that he pulled where he said that they've only them and Pittsburgh have won a game in the NCAA tournament the last 5 years. I think the whole thing about Texas A&M is they will constantly sneak up on you. And as much as I despise Mark Turgeon, you know, he's been nothing if not consistent. And they just seem like a team with a weak South that will probably rack up a lot of wins, and they probably will hover in the top four. Of all the teams down there, they seem like the one that's probably most likely to get a first day bye. And, you know, Baylor at seven, it's hard to see a team with that much talent down at number seven. But I think, you know, people have talked about how disappointing K-State's been, and I think to a certain degree they've probably been pretty right. But I don't think that really holds a candle to Baylor. Perry Jones is a stud, and Laisdarius Dunn is, you know, a really good basketball player, if not, you know, even if he's a crabby dude. Baylor should be really good, and they're really not. And there's, you know, K-State's at least lost to teams that are, you know, pretty decent. I mean, UNLV's good, and obviously the circumstance was we were missing our two seniors. The game at Florida was just an abortion, so, I mean, we could just, that was just horrible. And then the beating to Duke. But, I mean, Baylor's losses have been, I mean, Gonzaga, we killed Gonzaga. So, I mean, Baylor at seven seems low given the talent, but probably right. And Nebraska at number eight, we were also talking about this. I think they just got it by default. Just because all the teams below them, I mean, Iowa State, I mean, how can you put Iowa State higher than nine? I mean, really? In Colorado Tech and, you know, like I said, Oklahoma, that is, you know, there's a black hole of basketball success right now. I think Nebraska gets to be in the top two-thirds by default. I don't necessarily agree with it, but I don't know where else you're going to slot them. I think you could probably flip them in Iowa State, but I think that's – I agree with pretty much all of it.
Yeah, I thought it was all very, very good also. The way I look at the conference is at the bottom you've got the two teams that are just hopeless wrecks right now in Oklahoma and Texas Tech. They're, you know, I suppose maybe they'll get a win against each other and or Nebraska, Iowa State, or Colorado. But I really can't see them getting a win over anybody in the top seven of the league unless, you know, they have a great shooting night and the other team has an off night. Then I think the next set, you've got the three teams that you mentioned, Colorado, Iowa State, Nebraska. Yeah, really, to me, throw those teams in a hat and pick one out. It's there. I mean, Colorado has two of the best players in the league and absolutely nothing else around them. Iowa State's got a bunch of scrappy guys that are going to play hard for the mayor, and, you know, they're going to wait for next year when they've got this boatload of talent supposedly getting eligible. Nebraska, I think, you know, Nebraska's a better team than they have been the last few years, which is kind of why I agree with putting them at the highest of that crew. But then again, I could see Colorado at number eight if Burks and Higgins can carry them. So I don't know. Then I don't know. I guess the top seven of this league is such a crapshoot. I think I'm pretty confident in saying that I don't think Oklahoma State, I don't think their ceiling even gets them into a first day bye in the Big 12 tournament. I think they're a pretty solid 5-6 team. Maybe seven if they have some struggles. Baylor, you know, what the hell? Who knows what's going to happen with Baylor right now? I mean, I could see them ripping off 10 wins in a row right now, or I could see them starting conference play 4-5. You know, I have no idea what's going to happen with Baylor. If Laisdarius Dunn's going to keep making 10 threes a game, then yeah, they're probably going to win some games. But I thought Brackett's comment when he said that Baylor is really more of the 08-09 team than they are last year's model. I know with all that talent, you look at it and you think, Jesus, you should just be able to roll the balls out there on the court and say, just go screw around, guys, and you'll probably be able to beat a lot of teams. But in the Big 12, that doesn't work. They're not that much more talented than everybody else that they can just go out there and street ball it and beat anybody. You know, well, I mean, they'll beat some teams, but they won't beat, you know, they won't do better than sixth or seventh in the conference. I kind of think the opposite way, and maybe this is reflected in the way that I drafted my fantasy team, but I actually think a little bit the opposite way of Penn as far as Texas. I look at them at five, and I think, you know, especially with a weak South, I can really see them, I don't know, two, three, if they play well. I understand that you have to allow for the Rick Barnes factor and the possibility that they may implode in the way that they did last year, but they haven't yet. And until they do, I'm still going to be pretty wary of them.
Sympathist.
I know. I lived there too long, I guess. But too long in you guys' eyes, not long enough in my eyes, I guess. But and A&M, it's funny that you mentioned, and it's funny that Brackett brought that up and that Pan just brought it up, because before basketball season even started, I have a very good friend from Texas A&M who went on a Gmail chat rant about the fact that Baylor was getting all this preseason love over Texas A&M, and he was citing all the stats, you know, the 5 years in a row that they've won an NCAA tournament game, however many years in a row it is that they've had a first day bye in the Big 12 tournament, on and on and on. And he got done, and I was like, you know what, Chris, I can't disagree with any of what you just said. I think you're absolutely right. And, you know, A&M is just, I don't know, they're such a weird team. They don't, you look at them on paper and you don't think this year, you think, wow, they're really not very talented, but they're playing pretty well. And they probably will continue to play pretty well. I don't know. All the teams from 2 to 5 on Brackett's list, K-State, Missouri, Texas A&M, Texas, and then maybe throw Baylor in just as a complete wild card. I think all of those teams are in the mix for the top four, and I think that any of them could probably, if everything fell right, make a run at number one. But honestly, at this point, if I look at it and I look at a team that I think might be equipped to make a run at number one, and I know you guys are probably going to disagree with this, but I look at Missouri and I think that that team's pretty dangerous right now. They're playing well, they're on a roll, and with that team, momentum is such a big thing for the way they play that they worry me if they get ahead of steam going.
And if they do, I'm going to kill you both in the fantasy challenge.
Yes, yes you are. By the way, Brackett, I really did want to tell you this, but I mentioned it in a comment the other day, but my friend from work looked at our teams. Now, granted, he's a big KU fan, and he really doesn't know much of the Big 12 other than KU and K-State and a little bit of Missouri. So, you know, maybe he's not the best source, but he looked at our rosters, and he said, dude, this guy's going to kill you guys. And, I mean, he was just adamant that you were going to walk to the league title. So, congratulations, you've won in his eyes. I guess we should all probably just go home and not even try.
But he got the Nebraska fan preseason champion banner to hang in his cube.
Yeah, there you go. You can hang that up at work while you're going to city council meetings, Brackett.
Well, it's funny because I feel the same way about our supposed chances in the Big 12. Everyone's already anointed KU, right?
Well, they have kind of anointed KU, and while I see the imperfections in KU, I can't necessarily blame them. They win it every year. I don't know, you know, I'm not one of those who's inclined to say it's their title until somebody takes it away from them, you know, as far as the predictions. But after the non-con, I look at it and I think, well, we look at all these nitpicks with them, but they haven't lost. Now, granted, they haven't really played the greatest competition, but they just win.
I'm going to throw this out there. I know we've kind of cut Brackett out for a while, but I just want to throw this out there because I think it needs to be said, because I was just thinking about this today, and kind of in preparation for this, in your comment, Brackett just kind of teed it up for me. Everyone's anointing KU. Texas was 17-0 last year. They had quality wins over Michigan State, North Carolina on the road. They had beaten USC, Pitt, Iowa. They had beaten Arkansas. I mean, they had a decent non-con slate last year. They blew through it. Does anyone see any parallels other than me between this year's KU team and last year's Texas team? I mean, I think there is a definite lack of leadership on that team. I mean, I know that people point to one of the Morris twins, and I kind of giggle at them, but you're looking at a freshman in Selby to do that, or you're looking at Tyshawn Taylor, and then I start giggling at you again.
I will say this. I agree with all those parallels as far as the record and who they've played and whatever. I think that there's two differences. I agree with you that I don't really see a leader on that team, but I think, and the two points that I'm going to make are tied together here. I don't know that KU necessarily needs an on-court leader, because I think Bill Self is a good enough coach that they all look to him anyway. They don't look to the other players on the floor to figure out what they're going to do. They look to Bill Self to find out what they're going to do. And the other reason that I look, even though I see the parallels, I think, nah, is because, let's face it, Bill Self, greater than sign, Rick Barnes. I can't see Bill Self letting that happen to KU.
I don't disagree, but my thought is just kind of, and everything that Brackett said is right, in terms of I think they have a favorable schedule. I think that everything kind of lines up for them in the stars. There's just something weird about that team. It may just be me looking from the outside. They may go 16-0. I don't know. But from my perspective, there's just something goofy about them. Case in point, today, I don't know if you heard this. I don't know, Brackett, if you caught wind of this. Yesterday night, KU played UMKC, and they were blowing them out. And Bill Self issued a challenge to the team that if they were to win by 20 points in the second half, so they had to outscore UMKC by 20 in the second half, they'd get practice off the next day, or at least one practice off this week. I can't remember one of the two. And they only won the second half by 19. A couple of the players spilled the beans to the media today that they only won by 19 in the second half, so Bill's challenge wasn't fulfilled, and they had to have practice, and they were bombed. And Self was told about that. He was pretty pissed, and he even said he was pissed on the radio. To me, there is a significant lack of maturity on that squad. Now, there's an enormous amount of talent. I mean, I don't think anyone could deny that. I agree with everything you say about Bill Self being the encore, the leader. But there's something weird. There isn't a Sherron Collins that's going to will them to every Big 12 victory. You know, I remember, Sherron Collins, when I look back in his career, I remember that game against Oklahoma when they were stacked with Willie Warren and Blake Griffin. Mm-hmm. And Willie Warren and Sherron Collins went back and forth like with haymakers for three-pointers there for, what, two or three, four straight possessions?
Yeah.
You know, he was the kind of guy who willed them to win in Manhattan, I think, more than once. It's one of those things where I don't see that guy on KU's team right now. And eventually, I think the Big 12 is tough enough this year that they are going to lose. I don't think they're going to win 29 games like Ken Pomeroy says. But I think once their facade gets rattled, I think that's a team that can be fractured pretty easily. Anyways, any KU fans that might stumble upon this podcast have probably trailed off long enough by now, so I'm probably speaking only to the faithful. But I'm not necessarily buying the hype yet. I mean, they may end up winning the league, running away, seventh title. I'm not 100% convinced yet. And I think Missouri, as you said, I think they're just as good of a candidate as anybody to win this thing.
Brackett, any last words before we start talking about K-State specifically?
Yeah, I'll just kind of hit on some points. Regarding the order of finish, I mean, I don't really disagree with y'all. I had Tech ahead of OU just because I think Singletary is the kind of player that can blow up in a given night for them. I don't see that guy on OU's roster. I picked Nebraska ahead of Iowa State and Colorado because I think it makes a big difference to have a fourth-year coach instead of a first-year coach. I think if Bezdelic was still at Colorado, I'm not sure they would have lost yet. Say what you will about Nebraska's talent level, that guy can coach defense, and they're playing some of the best defense they've played under him, so we'll see. With Baylor, you know, Baylor and Texas I perceive as having the same problem. There's no point guard play. You know, Texas has got some freshmen that are trying to do it. We'll see how that goes. But that's what killed them last year. They had everything. They had all the NBA pieces you would want, but they had no one to lead the team or get the team in the right sets or do anything. And you know how important point guard play is. Baylor's the same team this year. They've got two shooting guards, one of whom is trying to play point guard, and he's kind of too short and too poor of a decision maker to do it, and the other one's a selfish shooter. In addition to that, Baylor has no true five. You know, I don't think Scott Drew did anything special last year. I think Epe Udoh did something special, and I don't know how they're going to replace that. And I also think they're going to miss Lomers in there eating up space. I mean, they got AC. He's a nice player. But the two Joneses are just soft, skinny, lanky kind of guys that are going to get beat up in this league just like they did last year against us. So we'll see how that goes. OSU and A&M, I just see two really tough teams. When you have a 16-game grind, like we all have to go through, toughness counts for a lot. So we'll see how far that can take them. But bottom line, the six most important games in this conference this year are going to be played in a four-hour stretch I-70 centering on Kansas City. And how K-State, KU, and Missouri do against each other is going to dictate everything else in this league. And I hear all the arguments about, well, KU will win all the Hemi games, and they usually win the home games against everyone, so they have the edge, whereas we have to play them at home or we lose to them. Well, we'll see how that plays out because I think it's as even a footing as it's been between the three ever. And I do agree with what Jandrum's saying. I think that KU, yeah, it's a question of point guard play, but again, they got no true five. And when push comes to shove and they're getting pounded on the glass and the Morris twins are pouting, who's going to step up and be physical inside for them? And I don't know that they got a guy that can do it. They certainly don't have a Cole Aldrich where you have to redesign your entire offensive game plan because he's blocking everything in the middle. I disagree a little bit in that I think that Selby can be that player for them, that leader, just because of his sheer talent and he has the kind of confidence that can go a long way. That's going to be their big question mark. He can step up and do it. But, man, when you're looking to a freshman for leadership, I don't know. I mean, it worked for us with Beasley a little bit, but we also had veteran guards, so.
It didn't work for a Big 12 championship.
That's true. So we'll see how that all plays out. But I think it's going to be a very fascinating year. I think coaching matters. I think we finally, we had that great turnover in 2006. And now all these guys are kind of entrenched and have their systems in place, and they're in their fourth, fifth year, so they've turned over an entire set of recruiting classes, and we kind of can really see their philosophies coming to fruition. So you have what's probably the best Missouri team yet. You have what could be the most talented and best K-State team yet. You have another very talented KU team, a talented Baylor team, a talented Texas team. It's going to be interesting to see how it all comes together, but just keep an eye on those schedules. I think playing in the South is an advantage this year, and getting to go to OU and Tech is obviously a lot more favorable than having to go to the South teams and went to the tournament. So,
yeah. Well, let's turn specifically to K-State and kind of quickly get everybody's prediction for our record. If you want, you can specifically delineate the wins and losses. Just kind of give what you think will be the final Big 12 record for K-State, and maybe if you feel like what place you believe they'll finish in the conference. One of you guys, go ahead and jump in.
Go ahead, Bracken.
I'm going to say 12-4, plus or minus one. That may sound really optimistic, but just think how different the perception of this team would be if Jake Pullen and Curtis Kelly get suspended one day later and we beat UNLV. We're then a two-loss team. The two losses are to teams with six national championship rings. We'd be ranked 10th or 11th in the country. I mean, it'd be completely different. That UNLV game changed everything. And I think to our benefit, because it puts a chip back on our shoulder and makes people start to overlook us again. But the team hasn't changed any. It's still the same team with the same promise it had. You know, I until I see us do it, I don't see us winning Lawrence. I don't see us winning in Columbia. And you got to figure with the three South Road games, losing two of those is probably realistic. Now, it might surprise us. I mean, they did 2 years ago. I didn't think at all that 08 team could win at Texas or A&M, and they won them both.
But that was at both, by the way. I just wanted to throw that in there. Sorry.
Yeah. I think the first goal has to be to go undefeated at home. That was a huge disappointment last year. We have got to start turning Octagon of Doom into a reality. If the only home loss is to KU, I could live with that. It'll still hack me off because I'm sick of losing to those guys. But, you know, I respect that they're good enough to come in and beat anyone in their arena. But, man, we got to defend the home court against teams like Oklahoma State and Iowa State. Can't be dropping those games. And that's going to be the key factor this season. But I'd say right now I think we'll lose at KU, at Missouri, at A&M, and at Texas. And win the other 12, and it starts this weekend, and I'll get into that more when we preview the game, but this weekend's game is just enormous.
Pan, go for it.
I agree. I'll take one step further. I'll go with 13-3. Ooh. And that is much more optimistic than I think even I'm comfortable with. I had a gut feeling coming into this season. I have a gut feeling now. That's all it is. You know, I really have no statistical data or any sort of logical analysis to back me up other than the fact that I'm just being horribly optimistic. You know, when I look at the list and I go down, I agree with Brackett. This weekend's game is enormous because you win this game, there's confidence there. And then you come home for two very winnable games against Colorado and Tech, and you're off to a 3-0 start for a team that kind of started off badly. Getting off to a 3-0 start would be great for the mental state of this team. And I think, you know, Brackett was 100% right when he said that the UNLV game changed everything. Well, I think that the Oklahoma State game can change everything. They win this game, get Kelly back for the game against Columbia. If Wally Judge continues his ascent in terms of statistical production, if we continue to shoot in the 60, you know, in the 66% range for free throws, I don't see how we, I mean, and even if Jake plays at a two-thirds of the level he did against Savannah, where he looked comfortable, where he looked focused, where he looked like he was comfortable and making good decisions, I think that the point guard by committee rotation has started to kind of settle itself in. Jamar has finally started to, I think, become more of the player that he thought he was. We thought he was going to be.
That you thought he was going to be.
Whatever. I still think he can be that guy, but
I don't disagree. You're just the biggest Jamar fan that I've ever known.
I love Jamar, but I think that 3-0 start gives them confidence, and if they go to Big Monday in Columbia, I really think that is the launching pad. If they can win and go 4-0, then the sky's the limit. Because you can lose an A&M, you can lose at, you know, you can lose at Kansas, and I think every single game after that is winnable. Because once you get on a tear in that back end, I mean, we're looking at what, after we play KU, we got Nebraska at home, ISU on the road, Colorado on the road, KU at home, OU at home, Nebraska on the road, Missouri at home, Texas away. I mean, theoretically, after the Kansas game on January 29th, if K-State has a pretty nice-looking record in the month of January, they could be favored in almost every single game for the rest of the season. And I think that it all starts with Oklahoma State, and it hinges on a win in Columbia. And if they can do that, I think 13-3 is a very realistic possibility. And they can take off and really do some damage. But, of course, if they lose in Stillwater on Saturday, I won't feel that confident. And I'll probably revert back to the 10-6 kind of group and hope for a first day bye.
Well, you two are both more optimistic than am I. I'm going with 11-5, plus or minus one. I agree wholeheartedly that the game in Stillwater this weekend is the biggest game of the season. And I agree that if they get that win, then you never know what could happen. I agree that the Missouri game will be a huge game. I hate playing there. I cannot see us winning there. My biggest thing that I'm interested in seeing this year is if we were to get on the tear that Pan's talking about, beating Okie State, beating Missouri. My question is, if they beat Missouri, do we see the team that goes out the next time out, like last year, against Oklahoma State at home and lays an egg? Do we see the team like from the Beasley Walker year, who beat KU and then went on the road and had Missouri dead to rights at Mizzou Arena and coughed up a late lead? My biggest concern with Frank Martin's teams still is they just don't handle success very well. They can play well for stretches, they can win some big games, but they almost never bounce back from a big win with a solid performance. Now, as you mentioned, if we get on that run that Pan's talking about and we do beat Missouri, well, the next game's at A&M, which isn't maybe the most likely place to win anyway. And as he mentions, we can afford to lose a game like that if we get off to the start that he talks about. But if we get off to that kind of start, then a team that is able to play at a high level every time out should be able to go to College Station and get a win. Let's face it, that's not exactly the most raucous atmosphere. And I hate saying that because I think that really the hardest thing about the road is I think the travel is as much the worst part of the road. I don't know how much these guys get affected by the crowd. You know, I'm sure it plays some factor, but I think that issues with travel and being away from home and dealing with things that you just don't have to deal with when you're at home is as much the cause for distraction that leads to poor play on the road. But anyway, that's just my theory. I'm going to say 11-5. I'm very pessimistic about this game Saturday. I don't think Oklahoma State's that great, but I don't know. We never win there, and until I see more consistent play, until I see really good offensive play against a good team, like, you know, the offensive play that we've seen the last few games, I just can't get optimistic about really us winning anything, you know, any big game right now. Now, if they go get that game, then I might immediately think, wow, you know, we really have a chance to keep this thing rolling and what could be a contender in the league still. But right now I'm saying 11-5. I think probably losses to, I'm going to say losses at Missouri, at KU. I think we'll lose one of the two at Texas and at A&M. I'm going to say that I think we probably lose at Oklahoma State, and then I think we lose one somewhere else that, you know, it'll be kind of a surprise, or, you know, or maybe not. You know, maybe we lose both of the UT and A&M games. I don't know. But for right now, I'm going to say 11-5, first day bye, kind of the typical thing that we've seen out of this team. So unless somebody wants the chance for rebuttal against that ramble of complete incoherence,
just give one quick one.
All right, put it in there.
Okay, the point of your record prediction is that this team doesn't respond well after a big win. I completely agree. I think that's always been a characteristic. The one storyline that I think, you know, we have to kind of pay attention to this season, and I think what's going to end up making or breaking the season. I mean, we can talk about X factors, you know, like Wally, and we can talk about X factors like Rodney and how some of these guys are going to step up their games. But the redemption of Jacob Pullen is going to determine what kind of season we have. I think if you're looking, this is his chance to become a leader. This is his chance to leave an indelible mark at Kansas State. If he's, the Mike Evans scoring record is still a possibility. It's going to take a monstrous effort. It's going to take a deep run in both tournaments to do, but I think he can do it. I don't want that to be his sole focus, but I think it's there. If he can bounce back and be the kind of player that we thought he could be, if he wants to be an All-American, if he wants to prove he's an All-American, he has 16 games to do it. And, you know, I believe in the kid. I've always believed in the kid. I think that he'll turn around and make us proud of him, make him proud of himself, and really take us home. I think he can. He seems to have that look in his eyes. There was something different about him against Savannah. I know that's not a great judge of competition, but they are a great defensive team. And he ripped through them like it was nothing. So I think the redemption of Jacob Pullen is going to be the thing that separates us from 9-7, 10-6, 11-5, and the upper echelon with a chance to compete for the title.
Yeah, I don't disagree.
Big 12 title. I state that.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I will say this. If he manages to break Mike Evans' record at this point, then he should be the Wooden Player of the Year nationally, because that would take a heroic effort through the last, well, the last 16 games of the regular season and then whatever he's got in the Big 12 tournament and the NCAA tournament. So
it
now...
Go ahead. It would be Kemba Walker numbers down mathematically. I want to jump in real quick and say some things. Yeah, I agree with all that. But I also don't think he has to do it alone. I mean, that's kind of what we learned here, right?
Yeah.
I see what you're saying. I mean, early in the season, first couple of games, I had a sense of Jake that he was like playing at 75% capacity and he could just flip a switch at any point and turn it on and just dominate a game, like the way he did against Xavier, the way that Jimmer Fredette does when he gets on a roll, that kind of thing. And that went away after Duke, and I don't know if they hurt his confidence or what, but, you know, then he got to the point where he could barely make 1-3 a game. And then he comes back in Savannah and could not miss. And, I mean, it was just efficient. It was a marvel to behold. It wasn't like, you know, Ski Jones kind of stuff, but you could see where he could hit that level. And that is a huge component. But, man, there are some other guys in this team that I think could take even further steps than they already have. And I'm seeing positive signs that they can. And if they do that and he does that, I think then you're looking at not just a conference title contender. We're back to where we were in August talking about a possible national title contender. And the corollary I would draw here is Michigan State. I mean, that's another team that everyone has just written off. Watch out. I think they're going to be in the Final Four again because they've got a lot of veterans and they're getting it together now in conference play, ripping off wins, and they play defense and they rebound. And I just cannot overemphasize how much that matters. The four teams I picked to finish in the top four all do that. And the ones I didn't, I think, have major failures in that regard. And I guess that gets me back to the other player I think is going to make a say in this, and it's Rodney Magruder. I don't think he's just an X factor. I think he's the budding star. You know, TB said that we needed a team to get in a fight with us, and it happened off the court. Well, it also happened on the court. I mean, the guy lost a tooth. He's getting to a point now where when he gets open, it's going in. And that is some deadly stuff because people are going to start doubling Pullen again very soon. Or they're going to be doubling our bigs. And they're almost to a point where there are no options to choose, especially when we're running good offense. And then if you add Spradling and the others pouring it in, it just gets really, really ugly. I haven't given up on Nick Russell yet. I know that may sound crazy, but he had one hell of a game against UNLV. It wasn't the most efficient. He had turnovers, but the half-court shot, the confidence he had shooting, we got to find a way to keep that guy in the game and get him to the foul line. Because he's a nails free throw shooter. If he can just cut the silly fouls and keep improving on defense, I mean, you can see Frank with him starting him now again. He's trying to get him going. If you can get those three guards all going at the same time, I don't know who can beat us, especially with Jamar and Wally going at it. And that's just, I mean, who's to say Freddie doesn't turn the corner later in the season like Curtis did last year. I don't know. I won't rule it out. The big question mark is what will we get from Curtis? And I don't know. I mean, that's going to be the most fascinating thing to see. Is he going to come back and get focused and play like he did in the tournament? Or is he going to play like he did earlier this year where you didn't even want him on the court? And that's going to be the trickiest chemistry thing I think Frank's ever had to do, is trying to reintegrate Curtis. Reintegrating Jake's easy. I mean, he gets his own stuff. Curtis has to get set up, I think. And I don't know. It's going to be fascinating to watch how that gets handled. So those are my thoughts.
Well, now that somebody?
One other thing. Yes. Are we going to talk about the OSU game at all? Or?
Sure.
If you want to, go ahead.
Okay, I'll just launch into that then. Man, I hope you're wrong. Because if TV is right, we're going to be 3-4 coming out of January. And I don't think we want to be there. I think this is absolutely the most important game of the season. Because even if we lose those next three road games, I mean, it's a brutal schedule in January, just like last year. And we exited out of that 4-3. And then we got the nice, soft, easy February to make a run, just like last year. And we saw where that got us. This game is just massive because I just don't think OSU is that good. I know I picked them 6, and I know I've been lauding them, but if you watched that game against Gonzaga, they can be had. They can be had if we go down there and we force our tempo and get out on them. And I the parallel I would draw here is, you remember the OU game in Jake's freshman year?
Hmm.
A 50-50 game. They had Blake Griffin, and it went back and forth the entire game, and we made the last play and won it by 2. That sparked a 5-0 run to start the season. If we lose that game, who knows what happens? I mean, we beat KU in that stretch. We probably don't beat them if we don't get that confidence. This is the same kind of game, and I think as long as we keep this thing close, and I don't see why we wouldn't, Jake Pullen's going to make a winning play at the end, just the way that Sean Collins always did, like we were talking about. So I think we're going to bottle up their guards. I hope we are. I mean, if we play bad on defense, we won't. But they're small. You know, we've got big guards. We can give them some really bad shots to take, and they'll try to take them. I think we can clean up the glass as good as I think Moses is. But Sacre just absolutely owned them on the glass for Gonzaga, and that stunned me because, you know, you saw what we did to Sacre. Pilgrim's not playing particularly well for them. The real question mark is going to be that Olakemi kid, because he can just light up, and that's going to be a big burden for Magruder. But I love the personnel matchups, and I'm just strangely confident going into this. I know Stillwater is the bugaboo and the crowd and all that, but really they haven't even been selling out their games the last year and a half. They probably will this one because of who we are, but if all we get back that road attitude that we had, I honestly think we beat a better team on the road in Washington State. And this isn't anything this team can't handle, as long as they're going to take care of business. So I hope they do. It's a huge game.
Well, it's definitely not that I think that they can't win. I mean, I certainly don't mean to say that. Because I definitely think that if they show up and play as well as they're capable of playing, or at least just play very well, then I think that they probably will win. There are just so many things right now that I just... You know, I mean, and, you know, it starts with the venue, for one. But, you know, we saw them play well in Jake's absence, and then we saw them play well with Jake back. And if that translates to better competition, then, you know, yeah, I think that we probably will win. I don't know what it is, but for some reason, until I see it, I've got my doubts. So I do hope we go down there and get it.
You know, I think all points are very legitimate. You know, Oklahoma State goes about 8 deep, I would say. Maybe 9, but I think in conference play, you know, everyone kind of cuts a guy or two off at the end of the bench. So they go about 7-8 deep. I think the key in this game is going to be Marshall Moses. I think that's kind of a duh. But, I mean, one of the stats, if you go out to Ken Palm's website, I mean, they're the 14th ranked defensive rebounding team in the nation. We're the 3rd ranked offensive rebounding team in the nation. So I think there is going to be a monumental battle on the glass when we shoot the ball. And they don't strike me as a very deep team in the front court. Now, this is where having Curtis Kelly would definitely help us, because at the very least, that's more depth, more fouls. So I think whoever can win the foul, you know, whoever can stay out of foul trouble down low, which may not bode well for us, but if we can win that rebounding match, I think we win. I think the defense, especially Jake, who I would assume is going to be on Paige, you know, my hope is that Jake is able to keep is able to bottle up Paige. And if he can, and we can start isolating, and this is the kind of game where we're bracket, I hope Freddie turns the corner, because we need Freddie in this game. You know, he's the kind of big body that we need to keep Marshall out of the paint. So that, to me, is going to be the biggest thing that I'm going to be watching, is how we're handling it on the glass, because this is the legitimate test. This is on the road against a fantastic defensive rebounding team. Are we going to win that rebounding battle on the offensive boards? And if we do, we win. If we don't, we lose. And if they can do it, I feel comfortable that we can get out of January at 4-3, or I don't even know if or something comparable to that. I'd probably have to count how many games we've got in January. But it's going to be paramount that we have that winning record. And I think if they go down there, that is a quality win, a quality team, a lot to build on.
Agreed on all points. If anybody wants to say anything else about basketball, jump in now. Hearing nothing, we're going to move on to the part of the show that I'm sure everyone's been waiting for. We've heard the rumors that there may be movement at defensive coordinator or somewhere on the defensive coaching staff. We're hearing rumors left and right that Jim Levitt may be involved. I have no idea what the validity is to any of those rumors. I have no idea if they'll make a move there. I hope to God they do. I'm not going to bet on it until, well, I'm not going to bet on it if, and I'm not going to believe it until I see it. But I think maybe the more interesting thing for people who follow the program closely and follow the movement on the coaching staff has been the rumor that Sean Snyder will be moved from his administrative role at the football program to coaching tight ends. Now, generally, I wouldn't get too fired up about who our tight ends coach is. I really would have, to be honest, I would have had to look it up last year to know that Ricky Rainey was our, or however the hell you say it, Ricky Rainey, whatever it is. I would have had to look it up to even know that he was our tight ends coach. But knowing that Sean Snyder, or if this does occur, hearing that Sean Snyder is going to be an actual Big 12 football coach would make me furious. But my level of fury is the level of a single match to a thousand suns, which is Pan's level of fury over this. So I'm going to turn over the floor to Pan and let him give his rant on the possibility of Sean Snyder being our new tight ends coach.
Let me start off by saying that if you are the kind of person that feels that Bill Snyder can do no wrong, or if you are the kind of person that seems to think that it's his program and he can do whatever he wants to do with it, then you may as well stop listening right now, because this is just going to piss you off.
In fact, I would highly recommend it just for your health.
You might as well do that, because a couple of years ago, when Snyder was rehired, and I'm sure Brackett remembers this fondly, I was on a certain very popular K-State website message board where I reacted a certain way to the Bill Snyder rehiring. Granted, I was very into the Gary Patterson hire, but, when Bill Snyder was hired, I was pissed off. I was pissed off mainly because I knew what was going to happen. I knew that he was going to end up getting the band back together, which I was told he wasn't, which he did, so I was right. I was told that he wouldn't, Chris Gosh was promoted as the co-defensive coordinator, Vic Koning was the other co-defensive coordinator, that we just got Chris Gosh and we invited him over with those titles to get him away from Maryland because we were just going to use him as a linebacker coach and it's going to be Vic's defense. I said, Koning's flighty. He's going to leave. They said, no, that's not going to happen. He wants to work under a legend, which is the dumbest thing I ever hear. I hate when people say, oh, he's the legend. Anyways.
Yeah, he may be the legend, but he's also one of the worst coaches to work for.
Absolutely. He makes Todd Haley look like a fucking walk in the park. Anyways, the bottom line is, you know, when Vic left, they promoted Kosh. Well, guess what happened? That worked out badly, too. So, you know, the third part of it was, all right, well, if Bill Snyder ends up being the coach, and this was, granted, Krause was the AD at the time, and, you know, we thought it was the good old boy network in there. Then he's going to name a coach in waiting. That coach in waiting is going to be on his staff, and that coach in waiting is going to be someone like Michael Smith or Dana Dimmel or, God forbid, Chris Kosh. Well, some people out there threw out the thought that in some way, shape, or form, Sean Snyder would be the head coach in waiting. Now, I'm not saying that this would be a step in that right direction, or the right direction, step in that horribly wrong direction, because shortly after Snyder came, he gave Sean a lot of the duties. Like, a lot of the day-to-day duties, he mentioned how much he gave to Sean. So it allowed him to focus more on the football aspect of things or take things easier or whatever. Sean was a great help to him. And people thought, oh, God, here we go. And everyone thought, well, no, he's happy in athletics administration. Well, guess what's happening? If Sean becomes the tight end coach, he's officially a coach now. Now, granted, I don't think John Curry's anywhere near monumentally stupid enough to hire Sean Snyder as a head coach. I think that with this move that Bill Snyder is even saying that he should be a head coach. But someone has to explain to me the logic behind hiring your son, not a football coach, who was a punter, mind you, to be a tight ends coach for your university. Now, let's all be very frank about this. Tight end coach is a jerk-off job. I mean, most tight end coaches, it's kind of a rare position out there. I mean, the tight ends are usually coached by the wide receivers, or they're coached by the offensive line, or it's joint with the running backs. My assumption and my hope, my guess, was that Dimmel would take over tight ends because Dimmel coached tight ends down in Arizona. And, you know, he coached Gronkowski, you know, that's playing for New England now. I thought, well, Dimmel will just do running backs and tight ends because, I mean, fuck it, he's coaching, you know, Bryce Brown. I mean, he could just sit out there with a glass of lemonade right now. It's not like he really needs to do anything with his day. He can just say, okay, Bryce, just go run around for a while, and I'm going to go teach these tall guys how to catch a football. And then we could take that open coaching slot and give it to another defensive coach because God knows we need it. Or we could just hire some guy that's really, really charismatic, and he can be the tight end coach, and he can spend all of his time out recruiting for all we know. So, you know, he would have all the legal abilities to recruit. So we can go out and hire a young gun recruiter. We can pay him a boatload of money, whatever. I mean, you could do a million different things with that open coaching slot, a million different things. And if there are things that we know that need to happen, one, we need to hire more competent defensive coaches. Which, I mean, I understand why we haven't heard anything, and if Levitt's hired, then more power to us, but that's only a drop in the bucket as to what that defense really needs. And what this team needs overall is talent. And I don't think I'm really stretching it very far to say that, and no offense to the kids involved, this recruiting class so far is pretty subpar. And it's subpar in the sense that we're a month from signing day. We've still got 5-6 open slots left. We've lost our best recruit, who was a JUCO wide receiver, who was a placement at Butler in our backyard. We lost him to an in-conference team. You know, we don't have any defensive tackles. I mean, the recruiting is just a mess. So we needed a recruiter. And it sounds like we're going to get Sean. Someone. Anybody, and if any of you listen this far and you don't want to chop my head off, or even if you want to chop my head off, explain to me in the comments section why in the hell it makes sense to hire Sean Snyder. Why? One bit, other than dirty, stinking nepotism. And why? And I'm not going to say anything about the fact that he offered his grandson a scholarship, Sean's son a scholarship. I'm sure Tate's a good kid. I'm not going to say anything ill about him. You know, he's out there playing every day, so that's fine. You know, he's got it. But, you know, how many kids on this team are the sons of coaches? We've got Billy Kosh. We've got Tanner Burns, who transferred here after Keith Burns came over as the secondary coach. We got Tate out there. Snyder brought back a bunch of his old coaches, old K-State players. He's now maybe rumored to hire his son as tight ends coach. are we not even trying anymore? Who is the defensive coordinator that he's looking at bringing in? Jim Leavitt would be a fantastic defensive coordinator, but he's part of the old band. Has Bill Snyder really just stopped giving a shit? Or is he looking at this as a golden parachute for his family? I mean, there. I understand that when they put Bill Snyder Family Stadium on the stadium, that it meant something symbolic, that we were a family to him. I didn't realize that Bill Snyder Family Stadium, that meant it is just a workplace for his fucking family. That's the thing that I'm getting to. And, you know, I have an immense amount of respect for Bill Snyder. I have an immense amount of respect for what he's done for Kansas State. I do, always will. He is an icon to me. I look up to him immensely. But this is not something that I would ever do in a million years. This is not something I endorse in a million years. I know I'm probably jumping the gun. But I'm just saying, as a prerequisite, that this will not go over well. So if this in any way, shape, or form finds its way to Veneer, or if this in any way, shape, or form finds its way to Mr. Curry, and we've been told you read our blog, Mr. Curry, the fans will not take kindly to the hiring of Sean Snyder. And I think you will have a problem on your hands if you do. And I think that there will be a very negative backlash. And if there is no defensive coordinator handled, there will be a double backlash. You know, if this Leavitt thing turns out not to be true, it's going to be a riot. And if you hire Sean as the replacement, it's going to be ugly. And this was one of the big things that I feared when Snyder came back, was that we were going to experience this, that he was going to be so set in his ways, that he was going to surround himself by such mediocrity that it was going to tarnish his legacy, and it was going to drag us down to where we were. We've got horrible scholarship deficiencies. He knows that. He's even mentioned that on his coach's show. Yet we're sending up, what, 17 recruits? 18 recruits? We still have 7 to fill to get to 25 or something like that. And it's just, anyways, it's a rant. I'm probably not making a whole hell of a lot of sense. I'm pissed. And if this really does come to pass, I will be 100 times more enraged than I am now, that it's just a rumor. And it's going to be very difficult for me to look at anything with this football program with an objective eye until Snyder's gone. Because this is, if this is the road that we're being taken down, it's just pure and absolute bullshit. Rant done.
All right. I like it. With that, we have talked for a very, very long time. I salute any of you who made it all the way through this, and I was just penalized 15 yards for doing so. So thank you for listening. Thank you for making it through. I hope you were entertained. We'll be back next week. See ya. Salute me. 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 Salute me